Hello everyone, and welcome back to the Brexit Podcast. I'm your host Jennifer Han, and just when we thought that 2016 was about as strange as it was going to get, 2017 kicked off with Northern Ireland's power-sharing agreement between the Nationalists and the Unionists being brought to its knees by a renewable energy heating incentive to burn wood pellets, of all things. As the cherry on top of a pretty bad year, this ended up causing the resignation of Deputy First Minister Martin McGuinness, and a snap election was called, which is now set to happen on March 2nd. So for today's episode, Tim was joined once again by Conor Devine to find out the latest from Northern Ireland and how its people are feeling about the situation and the latest updates from Westminster. As always, if you enjoy the show and you want to hear more Brexit news like this, you can subscribe to us wherever you're listening to this podcast, or you can find us at brexitpodcast.com and on Twitter, Facebook, and Instagram at Brexit Podcast.
And it's a welcome back to the show to Conor. Conor, how are you?
I am very, very well, and it's a pleasure to be back on talking to you tonight about this very, very interesting subject.
Yeah, terrific. I mean, it was fantastic to have you on last time a few months ago now, and we had some great feedback to your episode, so we were really keen to get you back on. I want to start with what's going on in Ireland at the moment. You know, at one point, it looked like everything was going up in smoke. Martin McGuinness stepped down. Arlene Foster stubbornly refused to. The power-sharing agreement seems to sort of go belly up, but it's gone a bit quieter in the last few weeks. So can you bring us up to speed?
Yeah, so look, it's all happening over here in Northern Ireland at the moment. I suppose the last time I spoke to you, we were talking about Brexit and how that may or may not impact everyone in the side of the world. And I suppose what has happened in between times then, post our conversation, around about November, the end of November time, we had basically a storm brew up politically over a heaping incentive scheme. Which ultimately brought down local government, believe it or not. This was a renewable energy scheme which was promoted by one of the political parties here. But in a nutshell, it turns out that over the next 20-odd years, it's going to cost the taxpayers in all over the UK close to 500 million-odd quid. And whenever people found out the implication of this, it caused absolute fireworks at Stormont, and which ultimately resulted in the local government, which has been running here for nearly 20 odd years, calling it a day. So we are now in a period which is referred to as a political vacuum. Tim, we're in turmoil. It's election period. It's just incredible what has happened in Northern Ireland over the last 12 weeks. It's something that I don't think anybody anywhere would have predicted.
It's sort of maybe symptomatic of 2016 as a whole. You just couldn't see it coming, could you? Something like this.
No, it's incredible. It's just, you know, as if we haven't enough going on within the UK with what Scotland wants to do and the rise in nationalism, and then Northern Ireland voting predominantly 55% people want to stay within the EU, and then all of a sudden out of nowhere we have this RHI scandal, which, just for the benefit of your listeners, really in short, if you were to avail of this scheme, what the scheme proposed was that for every pound you spent on wood chippings, the government paid you £1.60. So it doesn't take a mathematician to work out, Tim, that there would be plenty of money in that type of business model. There was no cost control. The cost controls that were proposed at the beginning were taken out, or they weren't included. And obviously this has been running now in Northern Ireland for about 18 months. And once people started to find out what was actually happening and the cost to the taxpayer, all hell literally broke loose here in Northern Ireland.
So you said let's stick with what's going on there at the moment. You've got some upcoming elections. When are they, and what do you think is likely to happen?
So we're in a snap election, so it's quite tense over here at the moment. There's an election which is due to take place, I think it's on the 2nd of March. So, I mean, that's not too long away. For people who haven't registered, coincidentally, I haven't. I'm one of these people. I haven't voted myself in, I don't know, quite a long time. I suppose I've been disenchanted and distracted and disconnected from the voting process for different reasons. But anyway, I registered today. It's important. I think it's important that I start to get involved. I am interested in politics, but I think a lot of people need to, you know, start to contributing because, you know, if everybody wants things to improve and we all have opinions, then I think we need to play our part. So I'm not patting myself on the back, by the way. I think I should have been voting quite a long time. But anyway, the election's on the 2nd of March. So what's going to happen is that the parties are out now electioneering. The adverts are on television and on radio where politicians are out knocking doors, asking people to vote for them. You know, they haven't covered themselves in glory probably in the last 3 months. So I don't envy them knocking some of the doors with some of the welcomes that they might be getting.
Yeah,
it's a difficult old job being a politician, but that's really where we're at here. And the whole Brexit discussion is simmering in the background, literally. So, I mean, it's just really incredible times here in Northern Ireland. We are in the middle of an election. What people, the general consensus is that the bookmakers are probably looking at this saying the two main parties, which would be the DUP run by Arlene Foster and Sinn Féin, which is interesting, going through a period of change. They have Martin McGuinness, it's well documented that he had an illness which was quite debilitating. He has resigned pretty much over the head of this RHI scandal, but he didn't deem himself fit to run in this election, run for First Minister. So interestingly, Sinn Féin have went with a young lady called Michelle O'Neill, which is interesting for a number of reasons. I think it's a strategic pick by them. I think they're maybe trying to reach out to a new diaspora of voters, really. So you have the two main parties, and then you have the SDLP, which would represent the Nationalist Community, and then the Ulster Unionist Party. They would be the four big parties, and then you have a number of other parties like Alliance, who are doing and have been doing particularly well here in Northern Ireland over the last 5 years, which would be trying to reach out to everyone in the community. And then you have other smaller parties and some independents as well, who are obviously trying to provide people with a voice for the mandates that they will be seeking. So, you know, it's just a bit mad over here at the moment. You know what it's like. This is a quick election, so we don't have, you know, a 3 month sort of infill period and then an election. It's literally in a number of weeks. So it's going to be interesting to see how it works out.
And what are the pollsters saying at the moment?
We haven't really seen any, but as I said, I think the one party, if I was trying to sort of have a view on this, the one party that's under pressure, in my view at the minute, bearing in mind their fingerprints are all over this RHI scandal, has to be the DUP. I think they're under serious pressure. I think Arlene Foster, it was under her watch that this scheme was construed and constructed and presented as a viable scheme, which is going to cost the taxpayer $500 million. I mean, I'm just saying, if she was working in private sector or someone who made those types of decisions and were deemed to be responsible, they would probably be sacked. But with what happens in politics, sometimes it doesn't work that way. So I think, and especially what happened within the DUP, I mean, the minister who was working under, who then took over for Arlene Foster, Jonathan Bell, he has broken rank and has basically spoken out against the party. Coming up with all sorts of accusations that the scheme should have been closed down, and he tried to close it down, and he was silenced within the party. I mean, that has been a major problem for the DUP. Historically and strategically under Peter Robinson, it would be fair to assume that he was a really good strategist, and there's plenty of people saying that if he was still in charge, this may not have got out of control the way it has. But I think that the DUP might be the one party that's looking over their shoulder, because the Ulster Unionist Party are certainly trying to be more middle ground, reach out to more people. And certainly, I mean, if I was to, Sinn Féin, I think will still have a large vote. I think it's going to be interesting to see how this new appointment of Michelle O'Neill, will that reach out to younger voters, more females, that kind of thing. I think the SDLP are struggling to get their message out. I think the Alliance Party under Naomi Long are a very enthusiastic party. They appear and come across as great integrity, good people. The challenge for them is just getting their message out and getting enough people to actually put their axes beside the Alliance name. And I'm not sure. I think it is still going to come down to you know, tribal vote in Northern Ireland, the green or orange card ultimately normally is played, Tim. So, I mean, that's how I see it. I see it more of the same, but it's going to be fascinating this time to see if the DUP are punished. It would probably be the right for the most recent scandal.
And if they are, then how will that affect things going forward with Brexit?
Well, it depends, because normally, whoever has the most votes here, obviously there's two posts to fill. There's the post of First Minister and Deputy First Minister, and depending on what way the electorate votes, those two posts will be filled. But let's assume that it's the DUP and Sinn Féin are both returned. Well, it's not going to be, well, let's jump back into the double bed and everybody sort of lives happily ever after. These two parties have been really going for the juggler. Arlene Foster came out and said a few weeks ago that this is going to be a brutal election. And, you know, to listen to her party manifesto a couple of days ago, I have to say, as someone who's interested in politics, I find it very unsettling and unnerving to listen to that manifesto in the way that she attacked certain parts of the community by attacking a party who has a huge manifesto here in terms of people who vote for them. So, I mean, it is going to be brutal over the next 2 or 3 weeks. The airwaves are going to be coming down with toxic dialogue, and it's something, instead of turning on voters, it's something that will switch off voters. But we'll just have to see what happens. It's just going to be a fascinating few weeks.
So at the moment, there's a man on the street just looking on and seeing all the kerfuffle in front of him, but it's not too much unsettlement in terms of the...
I think the man on the street is definitely more engaged now than they ever been, I've mentioned it a few times. It's really all to do with this RHI scandal. This has really shone a torch and shone a light on politics in Northern Ireland, and it has really opened a discussion around integrity and who's responsible. And, you know, it's just incredible how this whole debacle unfolded, with Jonathan Bell stepping out and basically it came out on television through the Stephen Nolan Show, who would be known to UK listeners. You know, so Nolan's got a huge following, and this guy basically came out on television in November and said on TV that he was silenced and that this scheme could have been stopped. So I think that was a political earthquake in Northern Ireland. And I mean, everyone is talking about it. Everyone is talking about RHI. Unfortunately for the DUP, they would be perceived in life. For me, everything is about perception. And whether Arlene Foster or the DUP are responsible or not, the bottom line is it would appear that the public perceive them to be fully responsible for this. Now, there's currently a judge-led inquiry about to kick off, and over the next 6 months, we will get into the nitty-gritty, and ultimately a judge will hold someone to account, I would imagine. So it's going to be a very unnerving time, certainly for the DUP, but in terms of your question around the man on the street, is really pissed off in Northern Ireland. We are fed up with this. Every 6 months, 9 months, there appears to be some new political drama, which has been going on and storming now for the last 10 years, where the DUP and Sinn Féin have been holding power. And I know that has caused a lot of anguish in the community here, because the general people here, coming out of a 40-year conflict-stroke-war scenario, we've had 20 years of so-called peace, which... it's certainly a hell of a lot better. I'm coming on 40 this year, but whenever I was growing up in County Tyrone, where we had British Army on our streets, checkpoints, bombs, the troubles, to live and work here now and create employment, this is a totally different country, totally different place, and a totally different environment. And sometimes, Tim, you would think that our current politicians actually forget the progress that we have made in recent times.
Let's turn our attention to Westminster. Theresa May a couple of weeks ago outlined her 12-point plan for moving forward. She did include Ireland as a priority, in particular the situation with the border. Does that give you some kind of reassurance that a solution might be found?
Well, I think the view I would have on this is, obviously, I mean, it's interesting, and we're all listening to what Theresa May has to say and what David Davies has to say, and there is... most people, not just in Northern Ireland, but in the Republic of Ireland, are waiting to see what actually happens over the next weeks and months ahead. I mean, I'm not surprised that Theresa May, this is a real problem. Theresa May has many challenges at the moment around Brexit in terms of the deal that may or may not be struck with Europe. And one of the major issues that she does have is what happens in Northern Ireland. And that's just a fact, because obviously we border the Republic of Ireland. And over the last 20-odd years, there's physically no border there. You know, we're able to travel up and down. There's no customs. There's no army checkpoints. And from, I suppose, psychologically, that was a huge part of the Good Friday Agreement, which was struck here 20 years ago, which ultimately resulted in peace here. So from a nationalist and a Republican point of view, psychologically, the fact that the border disappeared effectively was massive, because those who aspire to be Irish and part of an All-Ireland at some point, that was some way down the road to getting to this dream. Now, the challenge that Theresa May and the British government has at the moment is how and what happens in Newry and in Buncrana at Donegal. Are there actual customs set up? Are there going to be physical barricades? Is their lorries going to be stopped? And that's just a huge, huge problem here. So I'm not sure how it's all going to pan out. There's been a lot of contributions in the last number of weeks from different people locally and internationally around how they may deal with this. But this is going to be, I think it's going to be one of the major challenges that maybe Theresa May has in the whole Brexit negotiations, because from the UK's point of view, what they want to happen in Ireland, the first and foremost thing at the top of their agenda has to be to keep the peace.
Yeah. So May has gone, in that speech, May said no one wants to return to the borders of the past, and she's looking for a practical solution to allow the maintenance of the common travel area with the Republic. In the proposal, some of the proposals have been put forward from people in the last couple of weeks over on your side. Has there been anything that's caught your attention and thought that could work?
Well, I think if you look at some of the rhetoric that has been discussed from Theresa May and James Brokensar as the Secretary of State here, and Theresa May met with Enda Kenny last week, and some of the wording that has been used around this, I think they're careful around the language they use, but they're talking like, you know, the border to be as frictionless and seamless, and at the end of that they put in as possible, right? And it's those two as possible words which I have found in the last week some of the political commentators are sort of saying, well, what does that actually mean? Are we going to be part of the customs union? Is it part of the common travel union? I mean, Gerry Adams said months ago that this whole idea of a soft Brexit is pie in the sky. I mean, and most people with half an ounce would understand that it is going to be likely a hard Brexit. But what does that actually mean? And this is the question that a lot of people have now. What does it mean? Frictionless, seamless as possible. And the bottom line is nobody actually knows.
Yeah. Yeah. It's still more and more questions all the time. When we last had you on, you talked about how the North had benefited from the European Union with the peace money, as you called it. Have you had any reassurances that some of that's going to be filled when we step out of the European Union?
No, so I think one way to talk about Brexit and forgetting the fact that we're in political turmoil locally with elections, but I think we're in a form of political purgatory at the moment, because nobody really knows how this whole thing is going to pan out. The European countries are all going to be watching this very, very closely, what sort of deal Britain negotiates. The French, with the rise of pen and dollars, are mad keen to get out of Europe. The Dutch have a high percentage of their people here, the right-wing guys here, looking to sort of exit as well. And so this Brexit negotiation, from a European standpoint, they have to be deemed to be negotiating hard with the UK. So, I mean, in terms of the funding vacuum, which for if you look at it from an agricultural point of view, what we do know, I believe, is that, for example, the single farm payment for farmers here in Northern Ireland is guaranteed up to 2020. Now, the challenge is, and what I've heard over the airwaves in the last few weeks, is what happens in 2020? What happens after that? Is the UK, in this new Brexit arena, is the UK guaranteeing the farmers of Northern Ireland the single farm payments. I mean, has that subsidy been agreed? And the fact is that it hasn't been agreed. And just this is something that, you know, I have and was critical of both the Leave and the Remain campaign last year whenever Mr. Cameron tried to wing the whole thing. I mean, there was no plausible business plan produced by either campaign. None at all. I mean, we all know about the guys who were promoting, you know, Brexit and the fact that there'd be 300 million quid saved, for, you know, to put into the NHS. And a lot of this stuff was back of a fag packet business plan stuff. And I think what we're really seeing now is the fact and the lack of due diligence that was actually put into this exercise before we even went to a referendum. It totally highlights the fact that there should have been a two-year consultation period in the UK where voters could have educated themselves around what might happen in if a Brexit came about, or what would happen if we chose to remain. You know, this is something I think we spoke about before, Tim. There was just no duty of care given to the electorate. It was more or less toss a coin and see how we go.
Yeah, absolutely. No forward planning. So you're as a businessman yourself, how are you operating at the moment? Are things fairly buoyant? You're quite upbeat about your own kind of your businesses when we last spoke to you. Has Brexit changed the world, or is it still pretty positive?
Well, I mean, I own a debt advisory business in Northern Ireland, and we help people who have difficulties with debt, mostly bank debt. So, I mean, our business
could be a growing market.
unfortunately for our clients, but our business has grown exponentially over the last 6 years. We have an idea to help people. And, you know, we typically would deal with people who bought property and are in negative equity. So the fact that our business is growing, it certainly isn't a reflection that the economy is improving. It basically demonstrates that there's a huge debt funding problem out there in society. I mean, we have the highest level of household debt in the UK, in Northern Ireland, and there's a huge debt problem, not just in the north of Ireland, but in the south of Ireland. But in a general, sort of more general comment, I think the business sentiment out there would be one of nervousness. And I think I was speaking to an economist friend of mine today who was chatting to some people in Europe last week, and there's a feeling out there that over the sort of next 6 to 9 to 18 months that the euro was going to shorten significantly. And that would be, you know, currently Europe has a number of challenges, but I've just read recently that, you know, we're back to the Greece challenge again, where Greece might have to tighten their belts in terms of, you know, increasing the austerity measures there. I mean, how much more can they increase austerity measures? What Greece actually needs, which I've been saying for the last 3 years, is debt forgiveness. It doesn't need new austerity measures. I mean, the Greek economy is on its knees. You know, it's just not working. So I think with the light being shone again on Greece over the next month or two, there's a huge problem going on in Italy at the moment. The banking system is arguably insolvent. There's loads, billions and billions of euro of non-performing loans. And there's word on the street that the Italians, as an economy, this year might be the first one to go in terms of the European model project breaking up. So I think if you look at it across the board, and then we see what our friend Mr. Trump and the impact of him in the States with Brexit all together, it's a cauldron of it's a real economic tsunami that's going on out there right now. And I think, you know, there's to be honest, you know, whenever I'm talking to people at the moment during the day, the first thing I would ask them would be, you know, have you any good news?
There
doesn't seem to be a lot of good news at the moment, but it's certainly a very interesting, strange, nervous time across the board, no matter, I suppose, what part of the world you're residing in.
On the good news side, are there any good news stories coming out of Ireland? You know, manufacturing in theory is probably a little cheaper at the moment for exports. Are there any positives?
I think Northern Ireland has got long term pressure points in that we're heavily reliant on the public sector. Still, would you believe it, in around 70% of the workforce here works for the public sector. The dynamic in the Republic of Ireland is obviously more interesting because obviously they have the low corporation tax, and in the last 20 years, that economy in that country is now nearly unrecognisable. You have got the Facebooks, the Googles, the Amazons, most of the multinationals are now all residing in Dublin. And effectively what has happened in the Irish economy, it's more or less a tax haven for the PLCs. That's ultimately the way things are panning out now. And I suppose from a Republic of Ireland point of view, there's certainly a school of thought that, you know, whenever the UK does finally Brexit, that a number of companies in London will cross the Irish Sea and set their companies up in Dublin. So I think Dublin is certainly expecting a spin-off Brexit, and they will be competing probably with the likes of Frankfurt and Paris and maybe Luxembourg. But it's interesting. It's just very interesting. I think maybe the Republic of Ireland are also extremely nervous because the UK is one of the main trading partners, and there's just so many dynamics up in the air at the moment. It's hard to be overly positive about things because it's so uncertain.
Great. Conor, thanks again for your time. It's been another fascinating insight into life in Ireland, Northern Ireland. Really appreciate you coming on the show again.
As always, thanks for listening. And if you enjoy the show, please subscribe to us on your podcast platform of choice so you'll be notified whenever we upload a new episode and you'll be able to tune in. In the meantime, you can find us at brexitpodcast.com and on Twitter, Facebook, and Instagram at Brexit Podcast. The show is produced by Jennifer Han, Tim Hemming, and Warren Paul, and our theme song is Cool Vibes by Kevin MacLeod.